Okay, tonight's shiur is dedicated to Lilui Nishmas, Dr. Lederach's yahrzeit, the yahrzeit of Dr. Lederach's mother that he's observing this evening. The name is?
What?
Your mother's name?
Mother.
Esther Rivka Bas Baruch. Esther Rivka Bas Baruch, the Neshama should have an Aliyah. We've discussed in the past, in this forum, the relationship between Beis HaMikdash and Beis HaKnesses, both in terms of Yiras and Kavod HaMikdash and Yiras Kavod Beis HaKnesses, in terms of Asiyas HaMikdash and Asiyas Beis HaKnesses, as we derive from Parshas Truma this week's Sedra. Tonight I'd like to discuss the requirement of having a mechitza in a shul between the men's section and the women's section, which also derives from a Mikdash Halacha. And we'll try to flesh that out a little bit this evening. I discovered in the Beis Medrash here a nice sefer called Beis HaKnesses Kol Chasa. I never saw it before. The author is Rav Meir David Shmueli. So he's mitzayin a tshuva of the Bris Yaakov, who I also never heard of before. Bris Yaakov, Rav Yaakov Livshitz, was an avezin in Avardik and other towns in the area over there. So he has a tshuva, Arachayim Simen Ches, of Tshuvas Bris Yaakov, addressing whether b'chlal there's a requirement to have an area in shul where women can sit. Is a requirement to have an Ezes Hashem? Is that part of Binyan Beis HaKnesses? So he says this should be dependent on whether, he thinks this is Machlokas Rishonim, whether the thrust of the imperative to have a shul in a community is that only to facilitate Tefillah B'tzibur, only to facilitate that which are Dvar Shiv Kedusha, where you require a minion, and a woman isn't mitzarev to a minion, and therefore the imperative to build a shul shouldn't include having a place for women, or is it broader than that, is a makom for tefillah bichlal, independent of actual tefillah b'tzibur, independent of Dvar Shiv Kedusha, a makom for Torah, etc. And he comes down indicating Mar Mekomos and the latter side, that there is indeed an imperative, a value in having a dedicated place for women to sit in shul. He notes that there's a Gemara in Sota, Daf Kaf Beis, that has a story of a Hi Almana. There's a certain Almana who would come to the Beis Knesses in the neighborhood of Rabbi Yochanan every day, and that was praiseworthy. He quotes a Medrash Mishle, quoting the Alka Shimoni, a story of an elderly woman who was in a lot of pain, and she went to Rabbi Yossi Bar Chalafta, and she said she wanted to die. So Rabbi Yossi Bar Chalafta said to her, "In what chus were you Marach Yamim?" So the woman answered that she was Marach Yamim because she always went to Shul. B'chol Yom. So he said to her, "Don't go to Shul for 3 days." She didn't go to Shul for 3 days, and then she passed away. So you see from here also the value of a woman going to Shul and having a space for them to do so. So Ezra's Nashim doesn't mean that it's where the woman would stand if they were there, but that's not a place that was dedicated for a woman to stand. But we'll get to the Beis HaMikdash in a moment. He also quotes in the Sefer Beis HaKnesses Kol Chasa, Perek Lamed Gimel, something that he saw in the Sefer Mishnas Yosef of Yosef Lieberman, the dying from Bnei Brak, not the senator from Connecticut. He has a Sefer on Hilchos Beis Knesses, which I couldn't find. I think the page reference here, or the Siman reference, is wrong, because I couldn't find it, but he quotes that Rav Yosef Lieberman quotes on the Tzan Zerav, the Divrei Chaim, based on the Tzan Zerav has a comment that on Yomim Noraim you shouldn't daven in a Beis Medrash without an Esses Nashim, because in the Zchus of the women that daven Mitzmivas Halev, HaKadosh Baruch Hu accepts the tefillah of all of Klal Yisrael. So he says, well, maybe that's only talking about Yomim Noraim, so you see that Shabbos Yantiv, maybe they wouldn't come to Shul. Okay. But it definitely seems that the consensus is that we do encourage having an Esses Nashim. That being the case, what is the requirement of separation between men and women in a shul context? So everyone points out the Gemara in Sukkah, the first page of the Mar Mekomos, Daf Nun Aleph Amibayis to Nun Beis Amin Aleph, the Gemara expounds upon the Lashon of Tikkun Gadol in the Mishnah that they would make in preparation for the Simchas Beis HaShoeva. Yemosa Yantiv, they would make a Tikkun Gadol in the Azara. What was this Tikkun Gadol? So the Gemara says the bottom of Nun Aleph Amibayis are the two dots. My Tikkun Gadol, Amr Blazer, Gosa Shishaninu, Chalaka Haisa Berishona, Vikifua Gizustra, Viskinu Shiunashim Yoshua Smilmal, Vanashim Milmata. Tanya Rabbanan Berishona, you Nashim Bifnim and Nashim Yuchutz. So originally, the women and the men were on the same level. Vayubam Lidei Kalus Rosh. And that wasn't an appropriate environment. Hiskinu She Yunashim Yoshua Smi Bechutz Vanashim Bifnim. So then they had the women on the outside and the men on the inside. Vadaina Yubam Lidei Kalus Rosh. Didn't help. Hiskinu She Yunashim Yoshua Smi Mala Vanashim Ilmata. So they made a takana. This tikkun gadol was that they had a balcony. They had the women sitting above and the men on the bottom. And that solved the problem of Kalus Rosh. And we're asked, how are you allowed to make this additional construction of the Beis HaMikdash to make this temporary balcony for the Simchas Beis HaShoeva? So the din is that you're not allowed to add on to the dimensions of the construction of the Beis HaMikdash beyond what's prescribed in the Torah through the expounded by the Nevi'im. Amarav, you're right. In principle, they wouldn't have had the license, even B'makom Tikkun Gadol for Kalus Rosh. In principle, they wouldn't have had the license to have a new construction of the Beis HaMikdash, but they found a pasuk that gave them that license. What's that pasuk? Pasuk in Zechariah. B'Savdaris, Mishpachos, Mishpachos Levad, Mishpachos, Mishpachos Beis David Levad, Neshem Levad. So, referring to the Hesped that's going to be Ba'achris Hayamim, Mashiach Ben Yosef, who's going to be killed. So the Navi indicates that there will be a separation between men and women during the time of the Hesped. So Gemara says, Kav v'chomer. The time when you're also in Hesped is not a time that lends itself to Kalas Rosh, and yet Amr Torah, Noshim Levad, Noshim Levad, Avshar Shesucha B'Simcha V'Yitzhar Sholei Behem, Simcha V'Yitzhar Shueva, where there's more of a concern of Kalas Rosh, Alachas Kama V'Kama, there has to be this separation. So everyone points to this Gemara as a source for having a separation between men and women in the Beis HaMikdash, and by extension in a Beis HaKnesses. Before we get to Rav Moshe's analysis of this Gemara and how it actually plays out in terms of the details and the precise nature of this requirement, there's a piece in this well-known work, The Sanctity of the Synagogue, Baruch Litwin, who was involved in a famous court case in the 1950s in the attempt to preserve the Orthodox nature of a shul that wanted to go conservative and get rid of the mechitza. So he was successful in litigating in court that the bylaws of the congregation required that the mechitza be preserved, because without a mechitza, a shul is not considered Orthodox. So he corresponded with the gedolim of the time, and many other congregational rabbis to support him in this endeavor. And this work is a collection of both the details of that case and contributions from many poskim on the topic of mechitza. A lot of this is in translation. It wasn't originally written in English. There's also a Hebrew version as well. So he has here an essay that was written by Byron Kohler in support of this position that you need a mechitza. So Byron Cutler in this essay has a few other indications from classic sources of the requirement of having a mechitza, and some innovative suggestions as to what you would violate if you didn't have a mechitza. So for example, in Yani Dioma, in Hilchos Bris Mila, the Rama writes in Yaradeya Simen Rei Samechei Se'if Yud Aleph, there are practice of having a kvater and bring in the baby to the shul. So the Rama writes that the woman would bring in the baby to the shul, mevia hatinokas ad beis hakneses. So it sounds like you'd bring, the woman would come up to the shul but wouldn't go into the shul. Okay. He points out over here as well that even if you couldn't find a formal requirement, a formal sifin shulchan aruch, doesn't appear anywhere in Shulchan Aruch beferish that you need a mechitza between the Esrus Nashim and the regular part of the shul. Tzitz Eliezer suggests Chelik Zayin Simen Ches. Why is that? Why does it say anywhere in Shulchan Aruch? So either because it's Pashut, or he suggests that maybe it wasn't Nogeya B'Yamim Kamonim, because then the construction always was that you didn't have a Esrus Nashim that was anyway part of the shul. You had a separate room, and there was a hole in the wall, and that was the extent of it. So Allah Aladah said you have the contemporary situation of having people in the same room and the need to write a mechitza. That's his hashara. You have to figure out if it's historically correct. But be that as it may, Rav Aaron Kohler writes over here, even if you were to say there's no formal din to have a mechitza, which is not the case, but even if you were to say that, so at the very least, it's going to be a violation of Minhag Yisrael and Al Titosh Torah Simecha. And then he suggests it's also Chashash Gezel, because when you sign up to daven in an Orthodox shul, and you invest in funding that congregation, and then they have a vote of the board and they decide to get rid of the mechitza, so they've been mafsid you the money that you invested in that shul, adaita dahachi, that is an Orthodox shul. So he thinks it's a chashash of Gezel as well. And he says some people yarshin the seed and shul from their fathers. And the fathers definitely wanted to remain an Orthodox shul. So you're violating the terms of the Yerusha, Mitzvah L'Kayim Divrei Emes, in changing the bylaws and the makeup of the shul. So he has a number of suggestions along those lines, a total of 15 different reasons that you need to have a mechitza in shul. Okay, with that introduction, let's take a look at Moshe has many tshuvas on this topic, about a dozen tshuvas printed in the Igros Moshe. The most comprehensive one is Chelek Aleph Siman Lamed Tes, which I think is the first printed tshuva on this topic. So Moshe begins by quoting this Gemara in Sukkah that we just started with, and notes, why is it that there's a requirement of Mechitza at the Simchas Beis HaShoeva to separate between the man and the woman in the Beis HaMikdash? So on the one hand, the Rambam Perush Mishnayos there writes that the concern was one of histaklus, that we're worried that the men are going to look at the woman in a prohibited fashion. However, Moshe notes that if you look in the Rambam, and yeah, the Rambam says something else. Hilchos Lulav, third page of the Mar Mekomos, Hilchos Lulav, Perek Ches, Halacha Yudbeis, is it here? Yeah, here it is. Okay. So Rambam writes, Ketzad Yosin, Erev Yantar Rishon Yimisakna B'mikdash Malkam L'nashem Milmalo, L'nashem Milmata, Kidei Shilo Yisarvu Eilu Meilu. There shouldn't be Tyroves. So, U'maskilin L'smokim Yotza Yantar Rishon V'chein V'chol Yom V'yom V'chol Shalmoy Maskilin Me'achash Yakri V'tam Shabein Abayim L'smok L'shar Yom Im Kol Alayla. So the Rambam doesn't say histaklus. The Rambam says that you have to make sure that there won't be tyrovis, that the men and women won't mingle. If you look in Hilchos Beis HaBechira, in the next page of the Mar Mekomos, Perek Hey Halacha Tes, Rambam writes, Ezra Sanoshim Haisim Ukefes Gezustra, there's a platform, Kadeshi Yuanoshim Roas Milmalon, Vanoshim Milmatan, Kadeshi Lo Yumur Vavin. Same thing, there shouldn't be Tarovis. So Ramosha is a little bit unsure as to whether these are two mutually exclusive considerations. Ramosha thinks that the thrust of what the operative real consideration is, la'alacha, is the concern of kalus rosh that comes through tarovis and not a stockless per se. So the Ramosha minimizes as it is, in general, in principles of Pesach, the Rambam says something in Perush Mishnayos and says something else in the Yad. Excuse me. We usually accept what he writes in the Yad Lalacha over the Perush Mishnayos anyway. So Ramosha minimizes the significance of Histaklus as being the operative factor and says that the real issue is Kalus Rosh and avoiding Tarovis. And that potentially has an afkamina lahalacha, which is the basis for Moshe's relative kula in terms of the shear that's necessary for a mechitza. So let's just read a little bit of the tshuva together. Let's start. This is Chelek Aleph Simen Lamites in Orech Chaim. And the page that says Sadi Tes on the top. So Ramosha recommends, he thinks that the ideal structure of an Ezra Sashim is to have a balcony as opposed to something on the same level. And then he writes that in principle, because the thrust of the requirement of Melchizedek is to avoid Kalos Rosh and not because of Histaklus, so let's just read Pate Sadi Test, the second column. L'chein Melchizedek Gavoa ad asar hektefayim shem establish ein lovel day kalasoshahatu. So Moshe is makel that as long as you have a mechitza that goes up to the shoulders, even if it doesn't cover the entire body while standing, you can see the women's heads over the mechitza, but as long as it goes up to the shoulders, that's enough to avoid a concern of kalas rosh. And here Moshe says that's about 3 amos, which is 18 tvachim, which, according to Ramosha's amma, should be about 66 inches, although Ramosha here and elsewhere writes 60 inches. But it's that ballpark. So Moshe doesn't think that it has to be taller than that. Sufficient to have 18 tvachim, somewhere in the 60 to 66 inch range, as far as the height of mechitza. Then Ramosha thinks that this requirement is in fact a din d'oraisa. How do we know that it's a din d'oraisa? So Ramosha has the following analysis. The Gemara, 2 points. The Gemara initially said that there were different stages. That first, the men were on the same level, and they came to Kalas Rosh. And then they decided to make a balcony, and they relied on the Pasuk in Zechariah as a marker for doing that. So Ramosha first notes another raya to his assumption that the thrust of the requirement of mechitza is because of kalas rosh and not because of histaklus, is that if the concern was histaklus, then what's the havamina that if they would have been on the same level, it would have been appropriate. So obviously there would have been an issue of histaklus there. So it must be that histaklus wasn't the concern. The concern was kalas rosh. Originally they thought that even if they're on the same level, you could avoid kalas rosh, and then they realized that wasn't going to be sufficient. How do we know it's a din d'oraisa? So if it was the case that this was only a din d'rabbanan, so that wouldn't be sufficient license to violate a kol b'chsav. Kol b'chsav tells you that you're not allowed to alter the dimensions of the Beis HaMikdash, of the construction of the Beis HaMikdash, as explained by the Nevi'im based on the Pesukim. So it's only because, says Ramosha, this is a din d'oraisa with the smach from the Pasuk in Zechariah, that you would have been able to violate what otherwise is a problem of a kol b'saf. It was only a din d'rabbanan, so there's no license just for a din d'rabbanan to violate a kol b'saf. That's what Ramosha thinks, that this is a din d'oraisa. And he concludes there in Simon Lamites. Even though you could have said the paragraph beginning of Hine. So maybe you could have said it's only a din d'oraisa in Mikdash because of Yeras HaMikdash, but in Beis HaKnesses it's only d'rabbanan. So he says no, that when it comes to Shas HaTfilah, when we're masker Shem Shemayim, Divrei Torah, Kedusha, Mistaber, that is a din d'oraisa. Because the Kedusha Beis HaKnesses is modeled after Kedusha HaMikdash. So even Beis HaKnesses, Ramosha thinks it would be a din d'oraisa. Ramosha does acknowledge that even though he's not as concerned about histaklus as being the motivation for the requirement of a mechitza, if women are dressed in a non-sneistic fashion, then you have a bigger problem if they're not going to be totally covered up. Although if it's only the hair that's exposed, if a woman doesn't cover her hair, so then you can rely on the Aruch HaShulchan. But nowadays, since it's pervasive that women don't cover their hair, then that doesn't create a problem for saying Kriyas Shema in their presence. So if you have a mechitza that's shoulder length, Ramosha thinks even in that case that would be sufficient. The Rav in a couple.
Would he require that if the balcony?
Would he require
shoulder length mechitza if it's
Yeah, so Ramosha doesn't seem to work with the notion of a separate rishus. Ramosha requires a mechitza regardless. In the Shuvas B'nai Banim, Rabbi Yehuda Henkin, so he develops the idea. No one else talks about this, which he knows that no one talks about this. He has a few siman at the beginning of Chelag Aleph. He says, why does no one talk about mechitza for Beis HaKnesses requiring the general mechitza, halachas and mechitza, v'chal Torah kula? So he's talking about, he was asked about a shul where you have a curtain. So you can't see through the curtain, but it's either not going to be Omni Ruach Mitsuya, or it's a good Achit, it's a Mechitza Tuliyah, we don't say Mechitza Tuliyah Beyabasha. So it's not a Hilchas Shabbistic Mechitza, even though it prevents you from seeing through. So Rabbi Henkin thinks that would be a problem.
Why?
Because you need a halachic mechitza. Why should that be?
Yeah.
So.
Not like the Rambam. Not that it's the Sakhmas.
So the other person don't say like him.
Yeah.
And he kind of gets offended that the Shoel even expressed some surprise that he didn't sufficiently defend this position that you need Hilchas Mechitza. Mm-hmm. There could be a Kul and a Chumrah. Could be a Chumrah that even if you can't see through it, if it's not a Halachic Mechitza and Hilchas Shabbos, it wouldn't work. Mm-hmm. It would be a Kula. He quotes in the Rav, in that Shuvas B'nai Banim, which I didn't see elsewhere, but he quotes from the Rav, that the Rav was Mekel B'shas HaDchak to rely on a 10th Havach Mechitza, which is a Ikar Adin Mechitza and Hilchas Shabbos, or regular Mechitza B'chol HaTorah Kula. And he quotes from his grandfather, Rav Henkin, that Rav Henkin was asked about a modern Orthodox high school in the city, doesn't identify which one, where they had a Mincha Minyan where the boy sat in the front and the girl sat in the back, and there's a Mechitza of 11 Tvachim. So Rav Henkin was in Mora Lola Isser V'lola Heter. So he didn't think that you should be mocha, you needed to be mocha, or that you needed to, that the Rebbe needed to quit over that 11th Hefach Mechitza. So be that as may, the Rav, in two essays here, printed in the Sanctity of the Synagogue, reprinted in Natty Helfgott's volume, disagrees with Moshe, he doesn't quote Moshe, but he assumes that this is only a din derabanan, based on the Gemara in Sukkah. So he says there's a difference between what he calls separation and segregation. Separation means not sitting together, separate seating. Segregation means have mechitza. So he says separation is that's a requirement min haTorah. That's what you learn from the Gemara in Sukkah. But segregation, the fact that you have to have a mechitza, that's only a din derabanan, that's a siv siag laTorah. That's an extra siag, but that's not part of the din d'oraisa. Again, Rav Moshe has various other tshuvas detailing some of the pratim here. Simen Mem, actually, let's look at Simen Mem Aleph, Chelek Aleph, Simen Mem Aleph. The Shoel here, looks like this is Rabbi Tibor Stern. I guess he was in Kansas City before he was in Miami. So apparently he wanted to say, like the Bnei Banim just quoted from the Rav, that maybe all you need is a tent tach and mechitza. Rav Moshe rejects that emphatically. And then Rav Moshe says, well, do you need a mechitza for other things? A page kuf beis. What about a chasana? Can men and women sit together at a chasana? So Rav Moshe is not convinced that that's a problem. Maybe it's only the beis hakneses, which would fit l'shitasa. If the real concern is kalas rosh and not estaklus, so kalas rosh could be a bigger problem in shul than in other contexts. If it's estaklus, estaklus should be usher equally anywhere. That's what some ask on Rav Moshe. If the issue is estaklus, sorry, that's what some ask on those that argue with Rav Moshe, which we'll get to in a moment. We're running out of time. That if the issue is estaklus, so what's unique about Beis HaMikdash? Estaklus is usher all the time. So some say, maybe it's says in B'nai Banim, that according to the Rambam, Estaklus in a Pnuya in certain circumstances, maybe Mutter Mekaradin. So you have to figure out what's added by the Chomer HaIsser over here. Take a look at Chelek Dalet Igus Moshe Simen Kaftes. He was asked about a mechitza that's solid on the bottom for the first 50 inches, and then it's more open, chalonos, or in theory glass. So he's not so into it, but maybe it's not Ruach HaKham Nochi manner, but maybe there'd be what to rely on if push comes to shove. Okay. The Samer Rav, Divrei Yoel Simen Yud, argues on Rav Moshe. He assumes that the thrust of the Isser is in fact Estaklus and not simply Kalas Rosh. He says, even if it was Kalas Rosh, Mechatesi, that if you if you're only covered up to the elbows, then you avoid Kalas Rosh. He says, if the issue is Kalas Rosh, so the problem's with the Rosh. So you should have to cover the head, not just up to the shoulders. And the Sama Rav is not alone over here. Even the Tzitz Eliezer that we just quoted before, Chelek Zayin Simchas, assumes that the mechitza has to be solid above the head, that the real issue is because of Istaklis as well. So assumes Dayan Weiss in the Minchas Yitzchak, Chelek Beis Simen Kaf. And both the Divrei Yoel and others quote a Kol Kore that was issued in the end of the 19th century, signed by, among others, the Tzanzer Rav and the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch. So some people quote this as the biggest signature there was the Tzanzer Rav, and others have quoted the biggest signature was the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch. But it's the same document that was signed, which I have slightly excerpted here, so I can find it. Printed in a Sefer Leif HaIvri Chelek Beis, Psach Migaonei Ador, 70 Gedolim, including the Tzanzer Rav, the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch, it says as follows. It was a list of prohibited innovations in synagogue structure and services that were being promulgated by the Reform in Europe. Sif Hei, Asir Lasos Mechitza Mavdelas Ben Ezes Nashim HaNashim, Rak ba'ofen asher lo yuchlu listakel anashim benashim, that the only acceptable mechitza is the mechitza where the man can't look at the woman. Rak yasu kinahog b'mekedem, should follow the mesorah. And if you have a shul that doesn't follow that mesorah, you're not allowed to walk in, even on Shabbos and Yom Tov, even Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, even if it, the only other choice is to daven the yechidus. The Sama Rav disagrees with people who have an even more extreme opinion than him. He quotes a tshuva of the Truth Shai, who argues that the Isser Estaklis applies in the other direction as well, that you can't have a mechitza through which women can see the men either. So even one white glass would be problematic. And the Sama Rav disagrees, and he says that that's not reflective of normative psak, even though the Truth Shai is a Sifri that sounds that way, but that Sifri apparently is not accepted lehalacha, and he has kamarayas that we see that there's no issue of histaklis of women looking at men, and therefore no issue with one-way glass.
The women who were standing up,
right,
can see the men.
Right, although some explain that the structure was that there was a balcony and 95% of the men were standing under the balcony, and it was just the meraktim or the jugglers who were in the area that the women could see. So that's not necessarily an absolute right. Okay.